This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:05 in the evening, and as promised, we're going to be taking a look at some of the big political headlines that have emerged over the last week. But before that, we were speaking earlier about a number of smaller stories, I suppose, one of which posited this idea that hotels want to help you detox digitally, that they would incentivize you to do so basically by saying, hey, if you lock away your phone in this little soft bag for a while, then we're going to give you maybe food or,
a snorkeling trip.
I think there were some mentions of better seats by the pool, the option to win return visits. So there were all these things, and we just asked whether or not this is something that we want hotels to do. Are we really paying them to help us take away our phones? Is that a good thing? Do we welcome it? If you have any thoughts, WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This one coming in pretty strong and hard, from Artie Baggio, saying, I feel sorry for Kelvin Yee. He should probably marry his phone.
acknowledged. Thank you. I don't know what to say.
And that came, of course, because earlier you said that you need a break from relaxation, which, yes, is I think you deserve that message. I'm sorry. I should be on your side, but that one, kind of indefensible.
Acknowledged again.
April says, I don't need this vacation. I'm totally addicted to my gadgets. But when I go serious board gaming, so not children's games like Monopoly, with my friends, I don't check my phone at all. What we need is an offline hobby we enjoy, not someone telling me what to do, which I think is an excellent point. And we've got KS, who says, not using any gadgets, it's kind of difficult. It takes 20 books in my phone. That will be an additional 150 bucks of luggage costs in weight nowadays. And how do I tune in to BFM without my app? So thank you for that shout out. And we also have a tweet from Ellie, who says, I've been happier with digital devices like smartphones. I remember relying on analog games, entertainment, etc. as a child. I honestly don't miss it enough to want something like a digital detox. And SC Koo says, I started a few months ago to not touching the phone before 9 a.m. It's amazing. I get so much done. I don't need the vacation. I am doing it myself. Which was, I think, the point that we were making earlier.
Yeah.
That really, I mean, this is something that you should probably just kind of take ownership for yourself and not rely on hotels to do it for you.
Yeah, that's true. And for myself personally, following CK's tweet, I have to do that because I find myself rolling in bed and wasting a lot of time just checking all my social media apps before I get out of bed. And that to me just really messes up my day a bit because I've already come out of bed a bit late and I've started the rest of my day a bit. There's a delay to the rest of my day.
Having said that, two fans have texted in, Faisal saying, I would pay more if I could get my family off the phones on holiday. So there you go. Faisal, there are some hotels. And Des says, would love it. I can then tell my clients and boss the hotel confiscated my phone. So yes, keep those messages coming. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We are going to be moving on though. So we did a political roundup earlier this week. We've of course been doing these shows every day where we look back at what the year has brought. And we did, I think, our political roundup 2 days ago with Ame Farid. And since then, though, lots of other things have happened. And we just wanted to be able to kind of, you know, since politics isn't going to stop churning out news, we're going to continue talking about it. So just a quick rundown of some of the headlines that we're going to be addressing. Firstly, of course, the growing dissatisfaction, I suppose, about Minister Waidamurthy and some people calling for his resignation. We also have PKR's Latifa Koya facing disciplinary action for alleging cronyism within the party. And there's, of course, just so much to talk about in terms of what's going on within the ruling coalition, the internal power struggles that may be occurring, especially with all these members who might be shifting away.
And something interesting that happened just today, where the election court orders a vote recount for Taxi Galugo. And we are also seeing the EC reviewing Sivaraja's status to contest in Cameron Highlands, in the Cameron Highlands by election.
That was what prompted a parliamentary walkout from the Barisan MPs just a few weeks ago. So we'll see what happens. In the meantime, though, we are crossing over now to Bridget Welsh, Associate Professor of Political Science at John Cabot University. Bridget, it is always so good to have you briefly with us on the show. So let's start with this uprising that we're seeing against Waidamurthy, the minister in charge of national unity and social well-being. He is being singled out right now in a petition with over 294,000 signatures demanding his termination from the cabinet. Why do you think he's been made a target?
Well, I think there are two reasons. Obviously, his involvement or perceived involvement in the temple scuffle actually has not gone down well with some areas and some constituencies. And second of all, he is, there are racial dimensions of the people targeting him. And I think that there's a sense that he could have done and handled the situation better. Overall, in many different quarters, is beyond the racial dimension. He's a man without a lot of political allies, and he's not deeply entrenched in different political parties. So he is more of a low-hanging fruit. And I think there is a sense among some people that they would like someone to be held responsible. And this, of course, is something that comes under his portfolio.
And as you mentioned, he's a man who doesn't exactly have a lot of political allies to rely on. Would you say that we should be concerned then for his political future?
Well, I think I think even before what's recently happened, he has a very different past than other ministers in this new government, having close connections with the previous one. And I think as a consequence, we see that this could have easily evolved. That said, I think that, this is something that represents a test for the new government in terms of how it will stand by people in its cabinet and how it will address and move forward in terms of trying to rectify and improve the way that the cabinet ministers are actually handling their respective portfolios.
So another person who's been under attack is Latifa Koya, PKR Central Committee member and Executive Director at Lawyers for Liberty. She spoke strongly against the practice of cronyism and nepotism in the recent appointment of party state leaders by President Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim. We're now hearing old party-style calls by PKR branch leaders to take action against her for openly criticising the president. How does this parochial rhetoric hold in the supposed Malaysia Baru?
Look, one of the big challenges stepping away from individuals like the minister and Latifa is that, there is all the focus on the personality and the persons. But in fact, this focus on personality differences is something that's really undermining the perceptions of the government. I think at this particular incident shows that there is ongoing contestation since the PKR election. There are clearly differences over the appointments at the state level, and there were respectfully different camps within PKR. But the focus on the personal is actually very problematic. There's not enough focus on the actual problems of governance or dealing with the issues of race relations, dealing with the issues of corruption, dealing with the issues of patronage and favoritism. These substantive issues affect the government across the spectrum, beyond these individuals involved. But the reports focus on individuals and the narrative focuses on individuals. And this is not just true of Latifa. It's how people are perceiving Nur al-Iza's resignation. It's how people are perceiving the contestation between Anwar and Mahathir, it's almost petty in its focus, and it seems to create the impression for the public that the government has lost the plot. It's focused on itself and it's infighting as opposed to focusing on governing.
And on that note, with this notion, this kind of perception that the government's lost the plot, Rafizi Ramli released survey results showing that Dr. Mahathir and Pakatan Harapan's approval ratings have been on the decline since taking over Putrajaya. Now, the impartiality of those results are questionable, obviously, given Rafizi's proximity to Anwar Ibrahim. But would you say there is truth to these findings?
Well, I would definitely question any survey that comes out of Rafizi or any of the political parties or actors in this process, given the infighting that sees across the spectrum. It would be the same thing if it came from AMNO or it came from Osman's camp or any others. But more generally, I think the broader issue is that this new government is no longer new. It's reaching almost the 8-month mark. It's past the 7-month mark, and it is having a declining honeymoon. Some would argue that the honeymoon is over. I think that that's probably still early. I think they're probably going to get a year, but it is a process of diminishing returns. And I think the question for the government is, what can they point to in terms of their successes? And I think the focus in the last couple months has very much been on many of its shortcomings, be it the issues of race relations and how this has been handled, the issues of the economy for many sectors in large are concerned about price rises and others. And so I think as a consequence, this is actually, the gloss over the promises of change and promises of reform, as well as the kind of improving the quality of life, is no longer as shiny as it once was. And of course, numbers would reflect that. That said, I think the numbers are still strong, and I think that the respective constituencies that supported the government are still there, and I think that there is also a lot of people who are looking and are looking positively to the dimensions that would actually open up and to give this government more of a chance. So they just need something that they can identify with.
Talk to us about the internal struggles that are happening both within PKR and within the coalition.
Well, let's start with PKR. We do have a very serious split that happened through the party election, and Osman Kemp won quite decisively. But it was an election that was very flawed on both sides, and I think it wasn't a clean election, and I think this is something that's very worrying for those who are concerned about the nature of politics and the nature of how party politics are evolving. It was one that is still bitter, and I think in post the results, that bitterness is still very much in people's hearts and people's minds, and I think we can see that in the appointments that are playing out. So the reactions of people to the sense that many of the state chairmanship appointments were from one camp has in turn provoked responses from other camps. And of course, this is a problem because the party seems to be continued to be focused on its internal dynamics as opposed to moving forward or working with other parts of the coalition and actually addressing and kind of coming out as a more unified voice for questions of reform or broader issues of governance. And this has been compounded by the paradigm of the focus on the contestation between Mahathir and Anwar and the questions of timing of succession and the questions associated with the respective politicking that's about positioning each other vis-a-vis each other. And of course, media frames these issues with creating perceptions of instability, perceptions of lack of trust, and of course, equally important, the inward focus that this results from. And I think, there are some people who would say that one side has leveraged more effectively by bringing in different actors from other political parties, mm-hmm. such as UMNO. Others would say that this is still an ongoing contestation. But for most the public, I think the perception lies with the fact that they're focused on the positioning of themselves as opposed to actually engaging in terms of setting out a plan for the future. And I think what we're going to see are real serious questions about what is the secession plan, what is the transition that the country is moving forward in, and how is that going to evolve? And I think we're at a critical point, as we move into 2019, is how much these individuals can put aside some of their personal differences to kind of focus on the issues for the country. And this will involve, sitting down and talking more substantively about transition. And I think so far what we've seen is that they're unwilling to do that and also discuss the secession in a meaningful way and also discuss what are the kind of policy and steps that will be moved towards that. But I think at least in the short term, and I mean the short term in the next 6 months, we're going to see continued infighting and continuing posturing and perceptions of that infighting basically muddy the waters.
Bridget, we just have 2 minutes left with you before we have to head to the news. So I'm just going to round up two kind of interesting bits of electoral news, I suppose. We've seen MIC Vice President Dato' Sri Sivaraj forced to vacate his Genting Highlands, his Cameron Highlands seat after the EC found that corruption had taken place. And he remains a candidate for the upcoming by-elections in January. So that's one point. And the other is that the Special Election Court allowed an application for a recount of votes in the Tasik Galugo parliamentary seat. What is the significance of both of these stories?
Well, I think, first of all, the fact that these election petitions are moving forward in a very different way shows that there's more independence and more assessments of the merits on these cases. I think this is an indication more broadly is that if there is one arena that we can point to as having a potential for reform in the last 8 months, it is in the area of electoral governance.
Bridget, thank you so much for joining us. And thanks again for taking the time, especially with the difficulty we had with the lines.
Sorry about that. Rain in Malaysia sometimes creates these problems, as we know.
Yes, that absolutely.
Season.
No,
Merry
thank
Christmas
you so much.
And happy holidays to everyone celebrating.
You too. Thank you, Bridget. That was Bridget Welsh, Associate Professor of Political Science at John Cabot University, and we were just doing a very quick roundup of the various political headlines that have emerged over the past couple of days and weeks. Stay with us on the evening edition. After this, we're going to be talking about social media influencers, as we have been all day. This is the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.